Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Stephen Schwartz, who is a senior fellow at the Samueli Institute and a research associate of cognitive sciences at the Laboratories for Fundamental Research. He's also the editor of the daily web publication SchwartzReport.net, where he identifies and analyzes trends that are affecting the future. He has an article in the science journal Explore, The Rise of American Theocracy, Implications for Science and Healthcare. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephen Schwartz.
Hello, Ian.
And obviously with the ascendance of Rick Perry as the leading Republican candidate for president, and of course he started out his campaign at a religious revival meeting in Houston, he apparently is, although President Clinton has referred to him as a rascal, other sources have told me that he actually believes in the rigid Christian right religious dogma that he espouses. So is that what's triggered your concern about the rise of American theocracy?
Well, I think that it is time, given that the what I would actually call premillennial dispensationalist Darbyism, which is really what that theology is, that kind of rigid end times, premillennial view of the world. Since that is arising as a political force in the country, I think we ought to take a look at what are the effects of these kinds of religious policies. I mean, this is not just an ideological issue. These questions are susceptible to scientific analysis based on, you know, hard data. And I think if you take a look at what the philosophies of someone like Rick Perry represent for the country, not based on what he's saying, but the outcomes of what happens when people like him come to power, it's pretty scary.
So do you think that nobody has put forth any criticism at this point, but presumably if he becomes a nominee, there'll be plenty of time for that. And one would think that his Republican opponents, at least Huntsman, I think is about the only one that's not a Christian evangelical, that this country, its hegemony around the world, its rise as a global superpower had much to do with science and invention, not to mention the atomic bomb, which, of course, maybe it's not the best example, but it's a very real one.
Well, the last 500 years has seen the careful accretion of information about the world and how it works, and all of that was attained through scientific methods. And I think that really, science really is, in many ways, the intellectual crown jewel of human history. So to begin to take it apart on the basis of theology and ideology in a kind of fact-free world strikes me as rather perverse. But I'm arguing something much more concrete than that. I'm saying if you look at the social outcomes that occur in states where white evangelical Protestants are in the ascendancy, this kind of rigid, dogmatic Christianity, you see, for instance, that there are far more divorces in those states where this is the dominant political worldview than in more liberal areas like the West Coast. I mean, I understand that Christians talk about family and marriage and all that, but the reality is that divorce is far more prevalent, and so is spousal abuse. That is, and particularly physical spousal abuse. That's one, you know, beating up on your wife because you don't like what she's doing. Or you could look at obesity. I mean, researchers at Northwestern University found that young adults who frequently attend religious activities are far more likely to become obese than those who don't. Or you look at violence. If you look at the correlation between the most religious states and the most violent states, you see that Louisiana, Tennessee, Alabama, Texas, Arkansas, these states which are both the most religious are also the most violent. And what my argument is, if these people are going to advance this as a political philosophy as opposed to just a religious view, that they ought to be held to the standards of good scientific analysis as to whether these kinds of programs actually produce the kind of society that we, most Americans, say they want.
So given the statistics, particularly the economic ones, since we're going into a recession and perhaps even a depression, obviously when times are tough, people turn towards deities for some comfort. So I'm wondering here whether the religious right will prosper from the recession, or conversely, since so much of the religious right is about the televangelists shaking down people for money, will some of these televangelists simply not do that well because of the recession?
We're going to find out. My guess is that donations of all kinds we know to be down. I mean, philanthropies in general are experiencing decreased contributions. And I suppose that, although I don't know because we don't have the data yet, and again, I mean, I stress this needs to be evaluated on a fact basis, not a polemic or ideological basis. But what we can say is that in those states where these political philosophies are the dominant view, that those states are not doing well economically for their citizens, that people are making less money, there's more obesity, there's more divorce, there's more spousal abuse, all of these kinds of social outcomes. There is lower educational attainment at a time when India and China are generating PhDs and engineers at an astonishing rate. If you look at American educational systems, particularly, again, in these states where autocratic religious views dominate, they're doing worse. So if we're going into the 20th century with an ill-educated, and it, you can hardly be anything but, I mean, there is a concerted effort in the United States amongst the religious right to pass laws which support creationism. And according to the Pew Research Group, 55% of Americans now believe the world was created within the last 6,000 years. Well, if you believe the world was created in the last 6,000 years, you have to throw out virtually the entirety of science. I mean, anthropology gone, paleontology gone, geology gone, physics gone, chemistry gone. I mean, you have to believe, for instance, that the speed of light is wrong. Because if the world was created 6,000 years ago, how is it we're getting light from stars that are hundreds of thousands of light years away? I mean, you just can't reconcile those two points. So if we have a person like Rick Perry who passionately believes the world was created 6,000 years ago, how in the world is a person like that going to deal with the challenging scientific issues which face any developed nation in the 21st century?
So, Stephen Schwartz, in your article in the Science Journal, Explore the Rise of American Theocracy, Implications for Science and Healthcare, you make the distinction between religion and spirituality, and you say it's time that we look at religion not through the lens of divinity, but through the lens of its humanity. Isn't that really the great paradox of the religious right, that they in many ways exhibit a hostility towards humanity? They're very hostile towards their fellow human beings who are homosexual. They're very much in favor of capital punishment, as we've witnessed just in Georgia. At least in terms of the Catholics, in terms of their right to life philosophy, they both oppose abortion and capital punishment. But the Christian evangelicals, particularly in the red states, simply don't have that religious consistency, at least that theological consistency.
That's correct. We have clearly going on as a result of this right-wing theocratic impulse that these forces that are in play in our country, we have a war on women. You can look at the Planned Parenthood attack, which hung up the entire budget for a while, not just as an argument about abortion. No, it's really much more about contraception, about women's right to have equal treatment, to have equality. There's a whole movement that's going on within the Christian evangelical movement that's even more conservative, that teach women that, no, that they shouldn't even go to college because that just turns their minds and makes them doubt their role as homemakers. I mean, this all comes out of the homeschooling movement, because if you homeschool kids, and you do so for these conservative religious purposes, well, then you only teach them things which support the creationist worldview, for instance. Patrick Henry University was created explicitly in order to create a cadre of Christian fundamentalists who would take over the government. And during the Bush administration, there were more interns from Patrick Henry University than any other school in the country. I mean, this is a consistent, thought-out philosophy of politics and theology whose purpose is to try to get control of the United States. And for purposes of their own special interests, a number of very rich people are funding this. Not that they're religious zealots themselves, but these people provide useful foot soldiers to advance their purposes. And it's time that we really took a look at what comes out of a society which follows these conservative right-wing philosophies. You know, Sinclair Lewis said, if fascism ever comes to America, it will come brandishing the cross and wrapped in the flag. And I think that pretty well sums up the whole thing.
So, Stephen Swartz, I'm just trying to get a sense of the theology here, of why it is such an angry and punitive kind of theology. There's no reflection of the Gospel according to St. Matthew, the Beatitudes. There's no sense that the prophet Jesus, who as an historical figure clearly had compassion for the poor and for the downtrodden, and if anything, if he had politics, he would certainly have been way on the left, not on the right. I'm reminded of the revolutionary inspiration of Thomas Paine, who said, "A cruel God makes a cruel man." What explains the punitive, angry nature of evangelicalism in this country as opposed to a more Christian interpretation of the gospel?
Well, I think it stems from a sense of persecution. It feeds on a reiteration of victimhood. You get a sense that you're being persecuted, which causes people to band together. I think it arises because it gives a promise of exclusivity. It is exclusionist in its fundamentals. That is, only the people who believe as you believe can be saved, and therefore everybody else is condemned. I think it feeds on the very human emotion of wanting to get back and poke your finger in the eye of people who are better off or have something more than you have, so that it plays on base human emotions. And it isn't really Christian. That's the point. It is premillennial dispensationalist Darbyism. And now it's morphing not just into the end times, but into this new form that's called dominionism, which is being espoused by a number of the Republican political candidates. And that's a real form of American imperialism that I think holds quite unfortunate implications for the long-range position and well-being of the United States. And I think it is time for us to take a look at these people and see what their policies produce. And we can measure this, just like we can measure the effects of exercise or the effects of meditation or the effects of healthy eating or anything else, education. This is susceptible to objective measurement. And before we plunge ourselves down the rat hole of religious fundamentalism and electing politicians that espouse this view, I think we would be very well advised to take a look at what the outcomes are when you let these people into power.
But just in closing, Stephen Schwartz, you mentioned the lack of education being a common factor here amongst the other things that you listed. Why is it then that this theology of dominionism is gaining political traction? There's a professor at Princeton who is one of the leading proponents of it. What is the sort of intellectual dressing of this kind of...
We're believers and we're better than the other guys.
But how do they make an intellectual argument that the United States should become a theocracy?
Well, you have to start, they begin with the idea, this revisionist history, which is that the founders really intended the country to be a Christian country. Now, the problem with that is that although there is ample evidence that all of the major founders, Washington, Jefferson, Franklin, Madison, were deists, not Christians in the sense that these people mean it. They'd have been appalled by this. You got to remember, it doesn't get talked about very much in the conservative circles, but all of the founders had either direct experience or family history, quite recent. I mean, you know, the Tudor history and the great struggle between Catholics and Protestants was one of the reasons a number of those families came to the United, or then the, what is now the United States, then the colonial world, because they were trying to get away from the struggle of the state controlling religion. In addition to that, in 1797, in the Treaty of Tripoli, in Article 11, a treaty which was published in virtually every newspaper in the United States, which was read on the Senate floor and affirmed twice and signed by John Adams, it says explicitly, the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion. Now, that's about as explicit a statement as you could get. And as I say, it was published in all the newspapers and read on the Senate floor. It's part of the proceedings. So you have to go back to that. The initial presumption in the revisionist history is that it's just a misreading, that what the founders really meant was we should be a Christian country. That's completely bogus. That's the start. Then you begin with American exceptionalism. We're better than everybody else. Our view is better than everybody else. This kind of American exceptionalist view, which again is a fact-free view, because if you look at our justice system, we don't rank very high. If you look at our healthcare system, we're either 26th or 31st in the world. If you look at infant mortality or maternal mortality, we don't rank very high. If you look at our educational achievements, we don't rank very high. America would be well advised as it goes into this century to pull back into itself and recommit itself to becoming truly an exceptional country, because right now we're riding mostly on reputation.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Stephen Schwartz.
Glad to be with you.
Again, I've been speaking with Stephen Schwartz, who is a senior fellow at the Samueli Institute and a research associate of cognitive sciences at the Laboratories for Fundamental Research. He's also the editor of the daily web publication SchwartzReport.net, where he identifies and analyzes trends that are affecting the future. He has an article in the science journal Explore, The Rise of American Theocracy, Implications for Science and Healthcare. I'm Ian Masters. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. This program is available for podcasts, and you can sign up there at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Time will land in America.
disappear.